1320 KFAN, the football station.
Guthrie and Ben, 1320 KFAN, 603. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson.
People think we don't have the same feelings as fans. People think that as media members, we're too far away from the situation. Oh, let me let you in on some insights here. Ben and I know rejection very well. Obviously, as a high school student, Ben was rejected by a lot of ladies, really every woman that he talked to.
Pretty much.
I was rejected by many ladies as well, but I definitely went to three different proms.
So knock on enough doors.
At least I had some success there. BYU's fan base is in some ways feeling rejected after the Big 12 decided not to expand after almost 2 years of nonsense and talking about the story publicly.
Not on BYU's part, on the Big 12's part.
Yes, the Big 12 talking about how psychologically disadvantaged they were and how much they needed to expand and how they needed a TV deal. And then they seemingly never really seriously explored the option yesterday. You and I have been dealing with some rejection for quite some time. Our producer, JP, is 22 years old. He will not let us hang out at his house on a weekend situation.
It's a Friday. You and I get off work at 7 o'clock. JP also gets off of work at 7 o'clock.
We're saying, hey, man, let's hang out. Let's do some young people stuff.
He's and JP, young and wild and free. And
we used to be. We know now we have kids and we're dads, but we say, JP, let us come to your house. And you know what he says? He not only says no, but then he insults us. He says, no, you guys are squares. He says, you guys are whack. He says, you guys don't even know the latest rap lyrics from the band The Weeknd. And you're correct, JP. We don't. But you know what Ben and I have? We have the knowledge of how to change a diaper at 3 in the morning.
We're marred by children.
We have life experiences that you just don't have yet, son.
And I think JP is afraid that when we go and sit with him at the cool bar or wherever he wants to go hang out, I don't know where he goes and hangs out on the weekends.
Ooh, a bar. I was hoping it'd just be his house or something, but yeah.
He's afraid that we're going to start talking to his friends and ask them about their kids. And his 22-year-old friends are not going to have kids.
Ick! Poopy diapers, man. Ew.
He's going to think we're out of touch.
JP, Ben and I are not denying that we're out of touch. We're asking for a little bit of of an agreement here where you will work with us.
Peek behind the curtains.
Look, we'll adapt. Maybe you'll adapt. Maybe you'll stop mentioning that we wheeze through our noses. Yeah, that's what happens to old guys. We make a lot of sounds that we didn't realize we were making at 22 years old.
Sorry. We fall asleep regularly.
No, we don't. We have sleep apnea. Yes, we have bad breath because we brush our teeth, I don't know, 3 times a week. I forget to brush my teeth every weekday now. It's just the kid gets up screaming at 6 in the morning. I get him going with breakfast. The moment I can get the screaming demon settled down, my daughter wakes up. Then my wife's out there and she's dealing. She works. I got to make my wife breakfast because, oh, happy wife, happy life. When is dad going to brush his teeth? JP, I guess what I'm asking is just for the love of Pete, can I come to your house and use your toothbrush?
If this is the pitch on Tuesday, I can't wait for what you guys say on Friday.
Let us come to your house. Please. I need this, JP. My wife hates me so much and I want to know what young people are doing. Oh, I used to be cool.
No!
I used to get to go to parties! And now I'm dealing with... I could solve diaper rash pretty quickly, but now... I need this, JP. Let us come to your house! I need it.
No!
I need it now!
Still no. What do we need to do to get over to your house?
Not be squares.
Oh. Hey, wait a minute!
Some things can't be undid.
Oh, I'll smoke a cigar because my father is a part of the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms revolution. I'll bring a gun over. You want that?
But yes, BYU fans are feeling rejected. Where we started here, BYU fans have waited 5 years for this. And in fact, BYU and Tom Homo, well, there was some side effects that were good with independence. They traded the ability to compete for conference championships for the ability to compete with other teams to get into a P5 conference. And now we know that that's not going to happen until at the earliest, maybe 2023 and potentially 2025 when the college football playoff reconfigures and wants to figure out, hey, what do these conferences look like and how are we going to award access to the college football playoff? I think that's when we're going to start to see real realignment with conferences. It's also coincidentally when most of the grant of rights deals expire coming up.
And the grant of rights deal is something that can't be overlooked. The Big 12 put that in place when the Pac-10 was expanding to keep the conference plans in place. The Big 12 is not going anywhere till then, but yeah, in the year 2025, all issues will be discussed. But BYU, or keep in mind that if BYU had, let's call them political issues, come up with the Pac-10, political issues came up with the Big 12, what's to stop further political issues from coming up the next round of expansion in 10 years?
I just, what has independence done for you? It's gotten you exposure. It's gotten you on ESPN. It's made you some money.
No, look, hold on. You cannot gloss over that subject. I mean, BYU did the right thing to go independent, and they have played a bunch of tough games on national TV.
How do BYU fans feel today?
Well, they don't feel bad because of independence. They feel bad because of the rejection from the Big 12.
Which the whole goal of independence was to get you into the Big 12.
Yeah, but BYU being independent didn't hurt at all BYU's chances of getting into the Big 12. I think the Big 12's own inability to maintain a constant message has been the overwhelming theme of the last 2 years. But then even saying that, I recognize that if ESPN and Fox paid the Big 12 hundreds of millions of dollars to get out of the pro-rata clause, then David Boren is a genius. So he didn't handle this thing poorly. I mean, certainly he
handled it poorly. He still got to his goal.
But yeah, he got to his goal.
The end certainly didn't justify the means, even though I think for Big 12 teams, they'll say, wait, we made $30 million last year, and now you're giving us an additional $2.5 million, which is kind of the number that's been thrown out. They're going to agree to a $200 million deal now with Fox and ESPN to get that additional money in with the conference and split over the years remaining. That would give you just over $2 million each. They should be happy. They're making $32 million a year. That's what SEC schools make right now. The Big 12 is not hurting. The Big 12 looks foolish. The Big 12 looks stupid. They look like their management doesn't know what they're doing. The presidents look like they can't get on the same page. Bob Bowlesby looks like he has absolutely no control over the presidents in his colleges that represent the Big 12. But they still have a ton of money, and money is ultimately what I think is going to matter to these schools leading up to the next round of expansion, which, again, won't happen for another 9 years. So at what point does BYU decide they need to change their course? What point do they realize that, hey, things need to be adapted to better fit the current landscape because conference expansion is no longer a part of the conversation? Let's talk about that with our next guest. You can find him on Twitter, at MattSBN. He's a college sports network manager at SB Nation. It is Matt Brown. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Matt.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Well, did anything come to form that you expected yesterday with the Big 12, or was it all surprising to you? I mean, in your opinion, how did the Big 12 handle themselves yesterday?
Well, I feel like it's impossible to say as I expected when we're talking about anything in this entire process that's gone on for the past couple of years, because there's been so many twists and turns. There was a lot of smoke in the week or two leading up to this that they weren't going to expand, so hearing that in the press conference itself did not surprise me. And then, hearing just a couple of minutes ago that, in fact, everything David Boren said during that press conference was less than truthful about things being unanimous, that also didn't surprise me. The whole thing has been crazy, and I can't help but think that the conference and those leaders handled themselves and this entire operation pretty poorly. In retrospect, the image of this institution has taken a huge hit.
I think now with the Big 12, they have to try and distance themselves from this conversation, because you're right, they look so silly with everything that happened yesterday and everything that's happened really over the past 2 years, but more specifically the last few months. What about the teams on the other side of it? BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, the major players when it came to this conversation. What do they do now? What approach do they take? Because they all released statements yesterday saying, hey, we think we're a P5 team and we're going to continue to strive for that.
So this is a fascinating story. And I think those schools kind of fit into three different groups. You have a couple of institutions that applied because, hey, all of their peer institutions were doing it. I think they recognized that this was a real long shot. And they weren't spending a ton of money to ramp up and try to get to that level. That might be somebody like a San Diego State or a Rice. And then there, you can just keep on going, doing what you're doing, because that's what you are. But there's been a couple of institutions, and these are mostly commuter colleges, Houston especially, but Cincinnati too and South Florida, that spent an enormous amount of money over the last 5 or 6 years trying to bring their facilities to a Power 5 grade. What's unfortunate is that money has, for a large extent, come out of student fees or come out of bonds or other long-term financial things here that limit their ability to spend on other academic construction. So, like, Houston's already admitted we can't keep the same level of athletic spending if we don't make a Power 5 conference. So Tom Herman's not sticking around. You're going to have this palatial new basketball arena that they're not going to have a team or bring in teams to fill it. I think there you're in much bigger trouble. And BYU is kind of its own, you know, special entity because there really isn't another institution with a similar financial model or similar goals. And what they're looking at, I think, will be a different situation or different goals compared to Houston or Cincinnati.
What happens in the year 2025 to the Big 12? At least what do they consider in 2025?
Well, everyone seems to think this, and I'm on this boat as well, that you're probably not going to have a Big 12 as it looks right now in 2025. Now, who knows what the television industry is going to look like then? Who knows what the financial marketplace is going to be? But if there's not a grant of rights or some legally binding contract to compel Texas or Oklahoma to stay, membership in the Big Ten or the ACC or maybe even the Pac-12, that's going to be more financially lucrative, and it's going to be more academically prestigious to either of those institutions. And I think Iowa State's athletic director was pretty candid. It's like, you know, if those two schools leave the room, we're basically a bunch of Mountain West schools. And there, you know, do you look to grab a couple of these American rejects and cobble together a super T6 conference and hope that that's enough to make some more television? Is there all the other leagues pick the conference clean? I'm not really sure. And that's why I think this decision was particularly puzzling, because whatever happens to Oklahoma and Texas, they're going to be fine. But if you're West Virginia, or if you're Iowa State, or if you're Baylor, there's no other home for you. There's nobody touching Baylor with a 10-foot pole if Baylor comes up again on the conference, as a conference realignment free agency. So anything that makes your institution a little bit less stable in the future, I think it's a move that they're going to really regret.
Matt Brown's our guest, 1320K fan. Is there a drastic change of course needed at BYU, or should they let the wake settle for the next, I don't know, year, 18 months, and kind of figure out what direction these other group of five teams are going to be heading, or I should say these non-P5 teams are heading, and then figure out what the P5 is doing as well?
Yeah, I think in the very short term, I don't think a ton really changes for BYU, right? Like, you still got your ESPN deal. Presumably they pick up the options. You have that to 2019. You have some really pretty well-established football schedules leading up then. BYU is going to play multiple Power 5 teams. They're going to get a lot of those teams in Provo. You know, structurally, there isn't a huge change. Now, what happens, you know, for their next television deal, like, I don't know. Whether the big cable companies continue to lose money and ESPN says, hey, instead of $8 million, you know, your deal is only worth $4.5 million to us. Does BYU look at FS1? Do they look at NBC? Do they look at some kind of pay-per-view model? Like, that's going to be the big question here. And if the school is okay, you know, producing a football program that's not structurally able to compete for a national title and is not structurally able to really compete for top 15 spots, but is able to be a top 40 team that sells a lot of tickets and is a nationally relevant institution, then they still have a lot of options. If they want to be something more than what they have right now, then that's going to require some really difficult decisions, I think. And I honestly don't know the answer.
Does it appear that any other conference in the P5 category will explore expansion before the year 2025?
You know, I think the Big Ten would, I think, always look at their options. There's really a limited number of institutions that fit that profile, because they're looking for schools that are in the AAU. So if something really crazy happened and an AAU institution within their footprint became available, I could see them, you know, vigorously trying that. That's been the conference that's really pushed the envelope in these discussions. But there, for everyone else, it would really surprise me at the P5 level. Now, with the Mountain West or with Conference USA or with even the WAC, which is looking to potentially get back into FBS football, I wouldn't be shocked to see a little bit of moving around. But I would imagine at the bigger level, things should be stable for a few years.
Do we get the impression, as we talk to Matt Brown about the latest lack of movement when it comes to Big 12 expansion, do we get the impression that ESPN or Fox Sports or CBS is going to be willing to pay decent money for these group of five schools to retain their television rights?
Well, the current indication right now is no. We can look at this with what happened with Conference USA. Over the last year, and after Conference USA lost a bunch of their more marketable programs to the American, they brought in a bunch of much smaller institutions that were located next to larger television markets. You know, your Old Dominion, your UTSA, and their television deal is complete garbage. You know, they had to reach out to BN Sports, which is like, you know, an offshoot Al Jazeera or a former offshoot that's, you know, showing water polo and third-tier international soccer to get some of their games on TV, and those schools are making less than $1 million a year. As cable companies are cutting costs, the demand for non-premium content is that price is going to drop down a lot. So if you're a Mountain West or if you're a Sun Belt and you're up for your next round of negotiation, I don't think that your content is as valuable. Now, BYU is kind of a special case. Like, I don't think that their television property is going to be as valuable as, you know, a Big Ten or an SEC team, even a team that's much worse than BYU. But, you know, I think that they'll be insulated somewhat to what might happen to, say, the Sun Belt.
You can find him on Twitter at MattSBN, College Sports Network Manager at SB Nation. Matt, really great stuff. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, no problem. Take care, fellas.
There he is, Matt Brown from SB Nation, giving us a great breakdown on what happened with the Big 12 and their breakdown and where BYU can turn from here. When we come back, we're going to talk to our Utah Jazz insiders. The Jazz looked impressive last night, especially Dante Exum. What does it mean for the future? We'll break it down with Tony Jones. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
1320 KFan.
1320 KFan is the football.
Gunther and Ben, 1320 KFan, 625. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. A very happy Tuesday to you. We're going to talk to our Utah Jazz insider, Tony Jones, from the Salt Lake Tribune, coming up here in just a minute.
What do you take as a Jazz observer, Ben, of the way the Jazz have started in the preseason? They've had a few injuries now, and you've got to keep an eye on Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward long-term. So with same with Alec Burks. But overall now, is this team's ceiling still where you thought it could be?
You know, CBS Sports in the offseason, I believe, ranked the Utah Jazz as having the best reserves in the NBA. They said they had the number one bench. What we've seen so far in the preseason, I think, backs that up. You saw late in the Clippers game, the Jazz third unit, I think, beat the second unit of the Clippers. And that was the last Clippers game, not the one that we saw last night. We saw them have similar success against Phoenix as well a few nights before that. I think Utah's bench is really deep. I think it's as good as they've ever had, honestly, ever had, when it comes to this Jazz team. Again, they're not as strong at the top, and NBA teams are built from the top down. You have to have a superstar, and then you build from there. The Jazz still don't have that, though obviously Gordon Hayward is very good. The rumor that's emerged today from the San Antonio Spurs, or at least coming out of Texas, is that San Antonio may explore trading LaMarcus Aldridge before the end of the season. I've got to think, if I could swap Favors and LaMarcus Aldridge, that's something I would really think about if I'm the Jazz. It's a different style. It's a commitment to a different approach to the game. But when you've got a guy like Rudy Gobert who covers up so many mistakes that other players make defensively, if you could add a dynamic offensive player to that who's only 31 years old, I think that becomes a pretty interesting idea.
Are you not concerned that LaMarcus Aldridge has had his issues in San Antonio?
He had his issues in Portland, too. He wants to be the man. Would he not be the man here in Utah? He and Gordon would kind of split that. But
get in line behind Joe Ingles, man.
He's not fighting with Brandon Roy. He's not fighting with Damian Lillard or obviously Kawhi Leonard and Tim Duncan. He would be more clearly the man here than he would at any other place he's been. Let's welcome in our Utah Jazz insider. Find him on Twitter at TJonesSLTrib. Read him in the Salt Lake Tribune covering the Jazz. It is Tony Jones. Tony, what's going on?
Hey, Tony.
What's up, guys? How's everything?
Tony, I do want to ask you about LaMarcus Aldridge, but that'll come up here in just a minute. I want to talk about what we've seen so far from the Jazz. We haven't seen the starters play a lot together with Favors, Hood, and obviously Gordon Hayward managing some injuries. But I think this bench unit looks about as good as I've seen from the Jazz in the last decade.
Yeah, I actually put out a tweet last night during a game. I'd probably put the Jazz's bench up against any bench in the league right now. I mean, it's deep and it's really talented and it's really versatile, and they could do a lot of it can do a lot of different things as a second unit. I mean, if you look at where the Jazz are going to be, I mean, when they're completely healthy, and you look at, you know, the second unit is likely going to be, you know, Dante Exum, Alec Burks, Joe Johnson, Trey Lyles, and Boris Diaw. I mean, that is a really, really good second unit, and Joe Ingles looks really improved from last year as well, and so does Shelvin Mack. I mean, that's seven guys who are not expected to be in your starting lineup, who are really good players. So I think that, you know, obviously, you know, the Jazz starting five is pretty good, but that second unit has a chance, especially over an 82-game regular season, to really set the Jazz apart.
There's a lot of new faces on this Jazz team. How are they getting along? I know you wrote about some chemistry behind the scenes with these guys. What's the vibe like?
You know, it's really good, and I think that what really helps is that there have been some pre-existing relationships between the newcomers and the incumbents. I mean, you know, George Hill and Gordon Hayward, they're both from Indianapolis. I mean, so there's history with those guys there. Shelvin Mack and Gordon Hayward obviously played at Butler together. You know, everybody knows about Boris Diaw and Rudy Gobert. And, you know, Joe Ingles and George Hill, you know, I wrote about, you know, their shooting games, you know, just kind of getting shots up after practices and shoot-arounds. You know, so guys are really coming in and getting along with each other. And I think that the new guys are really trying to fit in with the incumbents. Like Joe Johnson is really trying to fit in, and George Hill is really trying to fit in. You know, and same thing with Boris Diaw. So, you know, what I've seen is a pretty close-knit group, and, you know, it should be interesting to see how that translates on the floor.
We've seen Dante Exum have good stretches. We've seen him have some bad stretches. I thought last night in the fourth quarter, understanding that he was going against some borderline NBA players and probably the other best player on the floor was Austin Rivers for the Clippers, I thought last night Dante Exum through the entire fourth quarter was the best player on the floor. Are we seeing his evolution really kind of start to take shape now with this team? Is he back to being a good rotation player?
Well, I mean, I think that he's been really good this entire preseason. I think, you know, he's a guy. I mean, you know, I think the one bad stretch I do remember was last Monday against the Clippers, where he kind of looked lost offensively. But, you know, he was so good defensively that game that he essentially won the game for them. So, you know, Dante's got a real skill that he's going to always be able to fall back on, and that's his ability to stay in front of people and defend. But he's coming along offensively. I mean, I think he's starting to realize that he's got a great first step, and that he's 6'6" and really athletic, and that he can do a lot of things with his body and with his skill set. So, you know, he's getting into the lane pretty much at will, at least in the preseason he is. And, you know, I think he's making mid-range shots and he's making three-pointers. I think that what I noticed last night against Austin Rivers was that Rivers really challenged him, and Exum really stepped up to the challenge, and he dominated him. And I thought that, you know, that's the first time I really seen Exum just want to go at somebody at the NBA level, and I thought that was pretty noteworthy.
Is Dante Exum in good enough shape to contribute the type of minutes that if the Jazz, you know, need him to, we could give him enough to play the entire game?
Well, nobody's going to ever be in complete shape to play 48 minutes unless you're just not playing on one end of the floor. But, I mean, you know, I think if the question is, can Dante Exum play 30 minutes at the NBA level, I would say that the answer is yes. I think that he can play starters minutes at the NBA level. I think that he's a guy that plays hard on both ends. And, you know, his thing is, you know, everybody gets tired. It's what you do when you're fatigued that kind of sets you apart. And that's where Exum's evolution has to come in terms of that. But in terms of him playing 30 minutes to 35 minutes a night, yeah, I'm sure if Quinn Snyder wanted him to do so, he could do so.
Tony Jones is our guest, 1320K fan. Between Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, Joe Johnson, and let's not put George Hill, because George Hill's going to be starting. Let's say those other three, Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, and Joe Johnson. Who's going to have the biggest impact on this basketball team this year?
You know, I think that each of them are going to – that's a really good question, because I think that Boris Diaw could have a huge impact on the offense with the way he passes the ball, especially Quinn Snyder's offense. And I think that you've really seen that. But I think, you know, I think that the guy who could affect the Jazz's ceiling the most is Trey Lyles, because he's the guy with the most upside of that three. And he's the guy that, you know, he could go from, you know, one level right now to another level by the end of the season. And if he raises his game to another level by the end of the season, I mean, the Jazz are going to be better for it. But I think all three of those guys are going to have a big impact. I think that once Joe settles into a six-man role, once Gordon Hayward gets healthy, not to mention Alec Burks, I think that he can have an impact with his scoring. I think that, you know, DL might be the best passer on this team right now. And I think that Trey Lyles, you know, his ability to play on the interior and on the perimeter, I think that it makes this team a little bit dynamic up front.
We know the Jazz in the past had positioned themselves to have cap room and trade assets to pick up a superstar if they ever became available. The rumor today is that LaMarcus Aldridge will not finish the season in San Antonio. Do you think the Jazz are still in the market for a player like that if he were to become available?
It depends on what it would take to get him. If San Antonio is asking for Derek Favors and Trey Lyles, I think that Dennis Lindsay would probably say no. You know, I think that LaMarcus Aldridge is one of the premier offensive players in the league in terms of big men. I think that he's a tremendous mid-range. He's better long-range than he's given credit for. He can post up. He can isolate for you. But I think that there are real holes in his game. I think that he's an awful defensive player, and I don't think that he really tries all that hard on that end. And I think that he's clashed with, you know, I think that he's clashed with superstars that he's played with in the past. I mean, him and Damian Lillard weren't best friends in Portland. So I think that he's a guy that, I mean, I would take a look at if I were the Jazz. But, I mean, if San Antonio wants to ship you out, I think that the problem right now is you. You know, because I think that, you know, everybody gets along with San Antonio. Even Steven Jackson got along with San Antonio. So if he can't get along with San Antonio, I mean, that might be a personal character flaw.
You can find him on Twitter at TJonesSLTrib and on Trib Jazz on Twitter. It's Tony Jones, our Utah Jazz insider. Tony, great stuff as always.
Thanks,
we'll talk
Tony.
Soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
There he is, our Utah Jazz insider. Tony Jones giving us a breakdown on the Utah Jazz. When we come back, we're going to look back at a fun NFL weekend, including some major injuries. And look back at the Pac-12 as well. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
1320 KFan.
1320 KFan is the football. 1320 KFan, the football station.
Gunther and Ben, 1320 KFan, 642. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson.
Could the Big 12 do themselves a favor by helping their public relations and hiring some of the ex-Donald Trump campaign managers who've done such a great job?
This would be an easier, this might not be an easier fire to put out than some of the things that have happened.
But the Big 12 did seemingly nothing wrong here. Now, Trump may have had some other issues, depending
because
on what you...
Because you'd be in jail.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could potentially. A lot of things could be going down here, but...
Because you'd be in jail.
Publicly, the Big 12 said a few months ago they're going to explore the interest level of candidates. They never said they were going to expand. They certainly did lead people on, and they behaved foolishly here, but it is worth noting the Big 12 never said they were going to expand.
Okay, we know what the Big 12's ultimate goal was. It's what everyone's goal is. Make more money. We want more money. What was David Boren's goal?
I think he's to hear himself not, talk.
Was is that all it was? It well, might be, but, just to have the but, spotlight.
Okay, but what if David Boren is not some belligerent moron? What if his goal the whole time was to put pressure on ESPN and Fox to take a look at that pro-rata clause?
But in 10 years, he has nothing to do with these schools. And the idea was to keep Oklahoma and Texas in a situation where they either stay in the Big 12 or they get more money going to the Big 10.
Well, and he did. He got them more money to
but
stay in the conference.
But why does he care? I don't know if he's going to be alive in 10 years.
Oh, well, again, he cares because he's competitive and he wants his name out there. I don't believe that everything David Boren has done has just been completely off the cuff and emotionally motivated. I think David Boren might have realized that he had a bigger voice than the Iowa State president, for example. And right. So when he starts talking about expansion, ESPN and Fox had to respond, and it would be collusion for them to talk behind the scenes. So ESPN and Fox responded by giving comments to the Sports Business Journal.
Yeah.
And then those comments led to a public deciding of what was going down, but the Big 12 never said publicly they were expanding.
Iowa State's president today said without Texas and Oklahoma, the Big 12 is the Mountain West Conference. So they have very little faith in what product they have outside of those two major schools. One suggestion would be to have more success with your other schools. That's what other conferences have found a way to do to make themselves relevant. The Big Ten is no longer just Ohio State, Michigan, because Michigan State has been so good, because Wisconsin finds a way to be good every once in a while, because Nebraska can be a good football team. The Pac-12 isn't just USC anymore or UCLA anymore.
Washington stepped up.
Washington, Stanford, Oregon, Utah's even throwing their name in the hat a little bit. They have found a way to get other conference or other teams relevant to the point where even without their superstars, they are still a threat for the college football playoff.
The Big 12 is going to be fighting a battle for the next 10 years or so, and clearly BYU will be involved in the discussion again. You know, I just think it's easy to overreact to the news that the Big 12 is not going to expand. Yet we were very upset here locally, but have you read the fallout in Connecticut, in Fort Collins, Colorado? How about on campus at the University of Cincinnati? BYU fans are not the only fans who are upset here. There's dozens of fan bases and programs that are upset at David Boren right now.
We haven't heard from Tom Holmo since yesterday when they released their official statement on the Big 12's decision not to expand. I do have to wonder, how much does Tom Holmo want to continue to play the long game? He's been playing the long game with BYU for the past 5 years when he left the Mountain West Conference to go to Independence. Look, Tom Holmo he's a superstar. You and I both think he's one of the most talented athletic directors in the country. He's 56 years old. He's put a ton of time and a ton of effort into keeping BYU in this healthy position, and he's not going to abandon that. But do we think Tom Holmo at 56 years old, which is not old, I mean, look at Dr. Chris Hill, he's almost 70 and he's still doing the job at Utah as an athletic director, but does Tom Holmo want to position BYU again for 10 years down the road? I wonder if at some point he starts to say, I think this is just as beneficial for BYU, and I don't think I need to worry about what's happening with this team 10 years from now.
Well, yeah, but that is his job. His job is absolutely there in large part to consider the long-term options for BYU athletics, short-term and long-term. Yeah, it's not an easy job. No one's denying it, but that's why most athletic directors are doctors, and there is no denying that Tom Holmo is not a doctor.
How much can you honestly, as a college team or any sports team, position yourself for 10 years down the road? You don't know who your coach is going to be. You can't expect to have a job in sports in 10 years. You're foolish if you do. You're stupid if you think you're going to have a job in 10 years.
It's really stupid.
Nick Saban might not have a job at Alabama in 10 years, even if he wanted it. Urban Meyer might not have a job at Ohio State. Look at Jim Tressel. You can't bet on anything for 10 years in college football.
But you have to have foresight in that situation, and BYU does have that. Remember, they chose to go independent. No one forced them to go independent. BYU now has been told no, seemingly by two major conferences, the Pac-10, back when they were still a 10-team conference, and now the Big 12. Maybe a P5 conference comes in the future, but in the short term, you know, you can't help as a BYU fan but think about these options. And yeah, it's easy to look at the win last week and 2 weeks ago, but down the line, fans are considering that because they see the writing on the wall. They see the money flowing into these college programs, and BYU is making money, but not nearly to the tune of what's going on in the SEC or the Big Ten.
It is also worth noting that the teams that have made the jump from what was a non-AQ or a Group of Five team in the past to now a BCS team or Power Five team currently, they've come from lower level conferences. They weren't independent. They hadn't positioned themselves for this jump. They were good Group of Five teams or non-AQ teams that were desirable and made sense geographically. And they made the jump. Utah did it. TCU did it. They had success making that jump. I'm not sure independence, I get what it's for. I get the restrictions it leaves you of. So you don't have to be in a situation where you're fighting those when the conference does expand. But you don't have to worry about that anymore. That's not on the table. There's no conference expansion to deal with any further. So I'm not sure why conference affiliation going forward would be a bad thing for BYU. I would love to see him in a conference chase, even though the idea of having to play a Wyoming or a New Mexico or a San Jose State or a Colorado State at times would feel mind-numbing.
I just don't think it's possible for BYU to go back to the Mountain West. I mean, you get a visceral reaction even talking about that. I think the AAC is an option. I don't know where this idea is coming from, that if BYU joined the AAC, they would somehow lose their ESPN deal. I mean, why would BYU do that? Of course, BYU would be able to negotiate for whatever terms they wanted. The AAC said for years they would publicly welcome BYU, and I'm sure they would bend over backwards to add BYU to their conference. So,
and they also already have a deal with ESPN. So ESPN, yeah, it's not like AAC would say, well, Fox isn't going to let us do that.
Yeah, so just take it all. No, yeah. We're going to take it all from you, BYU. No, right. Of course, BYU's not going to do that. And I also don't understand why a BYU football fan would respond to the idea of joining the AAC by saying, well, then we lose all our TV money. You don't get that money, homeboy. Your organization, your team that you follow needs right. to be profitable, and that's great. But why do so many fans seemingly want to bring up BYU's ESPN deal? If they join the AAC, I'll guarantee you they play on ESPN more. They make more money.
I also get the impression now that, and I think we know this, is that BYU is not making so much money as an independent that it's allowing them to keep their coaches any more likely than it is for a Group of Five team. Houston just paid Tom Herman $3 million. BYU's not paying Kalani Sitake $3 million, but good Group of Five coaches make more than what Kalani Sitake makes right now. So that's worth noting, that if a P5 team wants to come and poach Kalani Sitake with an unbelievable offer, they're going to be able to do it regardless of whether or not BYU is an independent team or a G5 team. And otherwise, I'm not sure where the money really matters to fans.
Well, I don't know why it ever even comes up. You know, fans talking about TV revenue. You ever heard a Michigan fan talk about that? You ever heard Ohio State or Florida fans bring up the TV revenue? I don't know why this issue comes up, but I know BYU is seemingly in a position where, for the first time in many years, it appears like they don't have the answers. You know, I remember 5 years ago when the news broke that Utah was joining the Pac-12 and BYU had to respond. They couldn't be left out in the dark. They had a game plan in place already. They had the TV truck, the TV network. They were going independent. And it has worked. Undeniably, inarguably, it has worked. But for the first time in 5 years, it feels like BYU now is seemingly without a game plan, as BYU's coaches are now taking to Twitter to talk about their own version of being in the Big 12, and they're talking about they're already with the Big 12. That's kind of been a theme that BYU's coaches have been talking about. And I know that, you know, BYU can continue to win games in the short term, and they can continue to block this out this season. But, you know, it is going to come up each and every offseason. BYU's fans do care. They do want to know. And, of course, they'll still support BYU through it, and they will still rep BYU through all of this. But there does need to be a long-term answer given, because Bronco did say independence was unsustainable.
I totally agree. I wouldn't make a drastic change tomorrow just to make a change. I wouldn't take any drastic changes off the table, though, if I'm Tom Holmoe at BYU. Let's get to football at 50.
1320 KFAN brings you football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
Football at 50, 1320 KFAN. Looking back at the Pac-12 weekend, the Utes knocked off Oregon State. USC knocked off Arizona. Stanford righted the ship with a win over Notre Dame. Colorado knocked off ASU. And Wazoo knocked off UCLA. Which win do you think was most impactful in the Pac-12 race?
You know, I think Colorado really showed that they are legit. I think if you were questioning them a couple of weeks ago, as I was, you know, they put a 40-burger on Arizona State, and I don't care if Arizona State's not that great defensively. Colorado's put themselves in position to make a bowl game, which is a huge success, and they found a little depth at quarterback. Colorado's the team, I think, that makes that made the biggest impact this weekend. You know, Washington State is not a contender in the North now, as I think.
They don't have a Pac-12 loss yet. Well, it's worth noting that will come down to the Apple Cup. They might not lose until that game. So there is an opportunity for them to still win the North, but I'm with you. I think Washington's significantly better.
Well, they're more consistent, and, you know, that wasn't the case maybe a couple of weeks ago, as I didn't think Washington looked all that good against Arizona, but that's what a conference chase does to you. As a football team, you have to battle through the ups and downs, and that's why a conference chase is so interesting. Stanford's a team that got a nice win over the weekend against a big name in Notre Dame, but I just do not understand how Brian Kelly still has his job at Notre Dame. Seemingly so many issues with no more excuses. USC blew out Arizona, but did that surprise anybody? I mean, Utah and Oregon State had an ugly back-and-forth game that Utah won close. Did that surprise anybody? I mean, I think Colorado showed you that they can win the South. I don't think it's going to come down to them beating Utah at the end of the year. I think if Colorado beats Utah at the end of the year, I think that'll more so change the dynamic of USC or UCLA.
I know Utah's schedule coming up is crazy, and it really is going to be difficult. UCLA on the road this weekend, Washington at home after that. Then you have to play at Oregon State, who's been surprisingly good to start the season. You get Oregon at home. You have to go at Colorado. All of those teams can beat Utah. Oregon's by far the worst, and Utah should crush Oregon, but we'll see what they look like towards the end of the season. Maybe they can get it together a little bit. Utah's got a crazy schedule, but I don't know if Utah's schedule is harder than Colorado's. I mean, Colorado has a road game at Stanford this weekend. They have to play UCLA at home. They go at Arizona, which is very winnable. But then they play Washington State at Utah. Washington State can beat you. Utah can beat you. UCLA can beat you. Stanford can absolutely beat you. And when you look at USC, their problem is they've only got a few Pac-12 games left because they played that early game. They're going to beat Cal coming up after their bye week next week. They're going to beat Oregon. Then they have to go at Washington and at UCLA. They can lose two of their four games down the stretch. If that's the case, they'll finish with four losses on the season. Utah's not going to get to four Pac-12 losses. I'd be stunned if that happens. Meaning, there's a really good chance Utah is only in the running right now in the Pac-12 South with Colorado. And Colorado, with that schedule, even though they only have one Pac-12 loss, can lose to Stanford, that would be two. Can you lose to UCLA, that would be three. Could lose to Washington State, that would be four. Utah could lose the next two games and still be in a good position to win the Pac-12.
Now, Kyle Whittingham has said for 2 weeks he thinks the Pac-12 South winner might have two losses. He doesn't specify conference losses, but you know, obviously that's all that matters technically if you're trying to win your individual division. Now, if Utah gets to the Pac-12 championship game, if Utah wins the Pac-12 South, it will undeniably be a huge success for
their best season since the Sugar Bowl.
I wonder if the next few weeks even factor into that. As you pointed out, you know, Utah's got some margin for error here. I suspect if Rosen doesn't play, Utah can beat UCLA. But Utah started 6-1 a year after they started 6-0. I mean, that's 12-13 to start the season. It's 19 wins in the last 2 years. Are you not entertained? What more do Utah fans want? I get that Utah's offense is not Washington State at times.
Sure.
But
Joel Klatt from Fox Sports had a great tweet yesterday. Utah and Stanford, over the last 22 games, have the best records in the Pac-12. They're 18-4. Utah's just winning games at a historic rate for this team, especially against this conference. You're right, but I think Utah fans expect a good finish to the season. I think they expect a Pac-12 South championship this year and to represent the South in the championship game. Huge thanks to our producers today, Mitch Harper. Find him on Twitter at Mitch_Harper. Our guy JP Chunga, you can find him on Twitter at JPKFan. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFan.
This is Jim Rome with your Rome Report.